Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. I'm Marla Zink of the Washington Appellate Project. I'm here on behalf of Chris Mortensen, who's present today in court. And this morning, I'd like to focus on two of the constitutional violations that occurred at Mr. Mortensen's trial. First of all, contrary to every effort that Mr. Mortensen made, the trial court linked his current charge of DUI to his 4 or more prior convictions for the same charge. And second, there was a faulty jury instruction which told the jury that it had to be unanimous on every count and the special verdict, but the DUI charge, and it failed to discuss how the jury could return on a hung verdict on the DUI charge as well. Turning to the first issue, which is Mr. Mortensen's motion for a new jury panel. Mr. Mortensen.
Let me ask you a question on a different matter. When he was sentenced, was he sentenced on the eluding charge with the felony DUI counting as a current offense? Did that count in his offender score for the sentencing on the eluding?
I believe that's correct. Okay. Yes, I think that's correct. I think it was calculated as 16 points on each count erroneously, but that's the way the trial court calculated it. On his motion for a new jury panel, Mr. Mortensen took every step that he could to limit the prejudice that this court has recognized in Young and that the Washington Supreme Court has recognized in Oster and in Roswell that derives from a prior conviction, or in this case, 4 or more prior convictions for the same charge as the current, or for the same crime as the current charge. What Mr. Mortensen did was he sought bifurcation of the trial, and when that wasn't allowed, he was granted bifurcation of the jury instructions, which is the Oster remedy. He also went beyond that, and he made sure that excluded from voir dire was any discussion of his prior offenses or multiple DUI scenarios. But more than that, he also stipulated to the prior offenses so that the state wouldn't be entitled to put on evidence of the prior offenses in front of the jury. And then yet again, he limited that stipulation so that all the jury saw was a generic citation that it fulfilled the statutory requirements without any naming of what those prior convictions were for.
It was the title, chapter, section, subsection listing for driving under the influence sentencing.
That's what was in the stipulation, that's right. Without any expectation that the jury would find out that statutory citation was the same as what he was charged under. The jury isn't ordinarily provided with statutory citations, and yet, the very first instance that the court had to address the jury panel.
Was the to convict intended, and did the to convict, in fact, refer to the element that needed to be proved with reference to the same title, chapter, section, subsection, citation to the DUI sentencing statute?
I think if I understand your question correctly, yes.
What I'm asking is, was it to convict worded that element B or whatever was four or more prior convictions of violating 4661, 5055, or whatever?
Correct. Yeah. As the stipulation was similarly worded. The issue is that by the time we got to the jury instructions, the court had already revealed to the jury that the present charge that they were deciding was exactly that same statutory citation. And that wasn't anticipated by anyone. That hadn't happened before 2 prior jury panels. But not only did the court broadcast that and then deny Mr. Mortensen the very easy opportunity to just start with a new jury panel that wouldn't have been prejudiced, but Juror 31, during voir dire, rebroadcast that information, and not only rebroadcast it, but told the rest of the jury panel that, in her opinion, that made Mr. Mortensen guilty of this crime. That's propensity that infected the entire jury, and that deprived Mr. Mortensen of everything he had strived to do to make his trial fair. And yet, the court didn't entitle him to a new jury panel.
Where would we be if the judge had not read the information, but we had a juror in voir dire happened to be familiar with that citation, perhaps because that juror had a prior conviction of his or her own, and responded to some question about, do you know any reason why you couldn't be fair, with a comment like Juror 31's? Would your client be entitled to a new veneer under that circumstance?
I think he probably would. I think that circumstance would be similar to Mock versus Stewart, where a juror brings their own personal information in and infects the jury pool. The prejudice that's
talked
about...
Well, that's not really personal information. What the crime is defined by the numerical citation is general public information and also is the law.
Well, but it's not information that the jury would be entitled to look up. So upon hearing the statutory citation, they wouldn't be allowed to then go look and see what that was. I mean, the remedy at this point, trial hadn't begun. They hadn't even started voir dire at this point in terms of individual questioning. And the remedy that Mr. Mortensen sought was a new panel. And this is more egregious than what this court considered in Young, because in this case, not only was there the rebroadcast by the juror, but this was the very same charge that Mr. Mortensen was facing. I'd like also to address just briefly this concluding instruction, which told the jury that the jury had to be unanimous on the eluding charge, it had to be unanimous on the failure to obey, which was a lesser included, it had to be unanimous to answer yes on a special verdict, and yet said nothing about unanimity on the felony DUI charge. And similarly, this concluding instruction taught the jury what to do if it was hung or conflicted on the failure to obey and the eluding charge, and yet said nothing of what to do on the DUI charge, leaving the jury with the distinct impression that it could be a simple majority, or if it was hung on one of the charges, if it understood unanimity, then it couldn't be hung on that charge, and it had to return a verdict, forcing minority jurors to change their position in order to reach a verdict in Mr. Mortensen's case.
Was there an instruction in this case to the effect of, this being a criminal case, each of you must agree in order to return a verdict? When you all have so agreed, please inform the bailiff who will notify the court, and you will then be brought into court to announce your verdict. Was there an instruction along those lines?
I know that at least the first sentence of that instruction was given, and it was given at the bottom of that concluding instruction, but that doesn't resolve the issue here because the jury was given some charges on which they knew they had to be unanimous. So the jury could have just as easily interpreted that to mean you need to be unanimous on those, but we said nothing of unanimity on the DUI charge. When you've reached your decision there, we'll hear from you. Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. Amy Mecklin. I'm a King County Deputy Prosecutor. I'm here on behalf of the respondent. If the court has specific questions relating to the issues
what
that...
What position did the state take on the defendant's request for relief on the issue that arose during voir dire?
What position did the court take?
What position did the state take?
The state, I don't recall whether the state expressed an opinion other than it would defer to the court or it didn't think that a serious enough irregularity had occurred. In respect to...
Is this a mistrial analysis that we apply to the court's ruling, or because the claim of error arose before jeopardy even attached, do we assume that the trial judge had even greater latitude to correct the error? And was therefore had a greater responsibility to correct the error at that time?
Well, I don't think that when I was briefing this case, I couldn't find anything directly on point with respect to that. I think State versus Young is, of course, the most instructive case because it's essentially the same scenario with different charges.
I know, and Young uses a mistrial analysis, and I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying, is it necessary that it be even that disadvantageous to the defendant when most mistrial requests are made after jeopardy has attached? Therefore, the court has any number of concerns about terminating this trial. Here, jeopardy had not attached, and so the court had unusual freedom in moving forward. Usually I screwed up a lot as a trial judge, but I tried to at least not do it before we got to the point where jeopardy had attached. But it would have been nice to know that I had even more freedom to take care of the things I messed up on at some stage.
Well,
so do we view it as the judge had even more freedom to do that and therefore more responsibility to do it?
I would not view it as though the court had more responsibility. The court is required to provide the defendant with a fundamentally fair trial, and I don't believe that this did deprive the defendant of a fundamentally fair trial. Moreover, I mean, the court has to be concerned.
Part of your argument was that he was conscious of his guilt, in his conscious, one of the manifestations of the manner in which he was conscious of his guilt was that he refused to give a breath test. When the judge says words that leads the jurors to understand that the person has been convicted of this offense four times previously, doesn't that bolster your argument that he was conscious of his guilt in a way that was totally not envisioned when these pretrial rulings were entered?
Well, the court did not err in reading the elements of the offense to the jury. And one of the elements...
I don't understand what you're saying. There's no obligation for a court to read the information. I know judges love to do it.
But it's not error for them to do it either.
It's not... Whether it's error depends on what they say and what they do. It's not an immunity.
Well, I would think it important to keep in mind that Mr. Mortensen is not arguing that the court erred by reading the element of the offense that required four prior convictions. He's saying that the error occurred when the court read the statutory citation at the end of the amended information. So that's not something that
I don't read it that way, because that statutory citation appears in two places when you read the information.
I don't believe that
it appears in the description of the element for four prior offenses, and then it appears at the end with the allegation that that was violated in this case against the peace and dignity of the state of Washington, which is why judges love to read information, even though they don't have to.
Your Honor, the court's question to opposing counsel about whether the to convict instruction included the language is yes, it did, because an element that the state has to prove in a felony DUI charge is that four specific predicate convictions occurred, not just like an unlawful possession of a firearm charge.
But the problem that's created by the information that was communicated is the information ties all of that up. There's nothing in the to convict that tells him that the crime he's charged with that they're resolving is covered by 4661.5055.
I understand that, but I think it's a...
So it was coupling those two things.
I understand the argument, but what I'm saying is I think it's a stretch to conclude that the jury didn't reach that conclusion, juror number 31 during jury selection, on the basis of the fact that the crime itself requires four prior convictions, and I don't think the average member of the public is going to think that if a DUI is elevated to a felony based on four prior convictions for something totally unrelated. So I don't think it's a stretch for a jury
This doesn't matter because the entire exercise is purposeless, and the Supreme Court was silly in Old Chief to pretend that we could hide facts like this from the jurors.
Absolutely not. But there's a specific case that says when the predicate convictions are specific convictions under a specific statute. I mean, the stipulation itself that Mr. Mortensen signed is that the convictions that he had that were prior were specific convictions under the statute. So the state is entitled to prove that there are specific convictions that occurred. And again, it's not a stretch for the jury to conclude on their own that those are probably DUI-related offenses. They don't even have to be DUI offenses.
Is he entitled to that gamble? He's deprived of the opportunity to gamble that the jury doesn't link up the number that they're given for the crime with the factual description of the crime. And the judge takes away that gamble that he wants to take when the judge tells them that this crime he's charged with now is the same crime as the one he's been convicted with four times in the past. Obviously, no one's ever going to know if there's someone in the veneer who actually can make the connection independently, because you're not going to get to ask about prior DUI convictions based on the orders on the motions in limine. But he doesn't get any benefit from that exercise if you remove the apparent hiding of the ball with just using the number.
Well, again, I think that the jury would have to have been listening to those statutory citations that were read earlier and in the context of the elements, and then remember that that was the same statutory citation that the court read at the very end of the elements. I mean, that's...
Which apparently exactly 31 did.
I don't believe that juror 31's comments can lead you to that conclusion, because the fact of the elements alone and how they are read you know, did on such and such a date in the state of Washington drive under the influence of intoxicating liquor with four prior convictions pursuant to RCW 446. You know, I don't think it's a stretch that the juror is going to hear that and think he's got four prior convictions for driving under the influence. Well, I don't think that link was necessarily made by Juror 31 or anyone else.
Well, maybe they will or won't, but don't you make sure they make the link by reading the information?
I'm sorry, I said that one more time.
Well, they may or may not make the link if the information isn't read. There's no uncertainty about making the link if the information's read because they're told they're the same.
Well, you mean the statutory citation at the end of the information?
Do I have to read the record as you urge it should be read in order to rule in your favor?
I don't think so, because I don't think that the court was, that the jury was given a specific instruction at the end of the case as well, and it's in clerk's papers 120, and it says the jury is not to speculate as to the nature of the prior convictions. You may not consider this evidence for any other purpose. You may consider it only
is
for proving.
The judge says evidence.
No, what the judge says is not evidence.
So that instruction doesn't even apply to what Judge Smith said, does it?
I think it does, because the juror is specifically told for
told
what
me
purpose.
That what the judge says is not evidence, and that
the
instruction.
Law.
And that, you know, this works really well when I talk and then you talk.
I apologize.
You just told me that what the judge says is not evidence. The instruction refers specifically to evidence. There was evidence. It was the stipulation.
Correct.
That instruction clearly applies to the stipulation.
Correct.
But that instruction does not apply to what Judge Smith said.
Well, when I said that what the judge says is not evidence, I'm referring to her comments during the original instructions when she read the amended information. The instructions that the court gives to the jury on the law, it's not evidence, but it's the law, and the jury is told that the law is that they're not to speculate about the nature of the convictions or to consider them for any purpose other than deciding whether the state has proved the predicate convictions. So I think that under State versus Young,
you think that instruction, which referred to evidence, should be understood by the jurors to apply to things the judge said?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is one of the factors in the analysis under State versus Young about whether a new panel is required is whether the court gives a limiting instruction to the jurors in telling them how to view the irregularity that the court has.
Well, where did the judge give an instruction with regard to the irregularity?
Well, she did not.
I think the state just answered that question better than probably I can describe it, but precisely, there was no instruction to disregard the irregularity that occurred or the statutory citation that was read.
The point of your argument, though, is that the irregularity, as I understand it, is Juror 31 saying there were four prior convictions.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor, but thank you for asking that so I can clarify. The error occurred when the court read the information which linked the statutory citations within 20 words of each other. So this sense
isn't
that
your better argument that the irregularity also includes Juror 31 saying there were four prior DUIs and as a consequence the veneer being tainted?
I think that enhanced the irregularity, yes.
Given what has occurred in Seattle over the last few years, including the killing and serious injury of a family outside the front door of Eckstein High School, and given this record, which indicates that a number of other members of the veneer had very strong feelings about DUI convictions, didn't we have a very serious irregularity here?
I think it absolutely was a very serious irregularity, and the solution was very simple, and the court entirely disregarded it. Furthermore, the amplification by juror number 31 not only rebroadcast it to the whole jury, but presented an ER 404B not allowable propensity argument that was then also broadcast to the jury. And it also rebuts the state's argument that the jury wouldn't figure it out. And in answer to Judge Dwyer's question, the state did give a position, and that's at pages 47 through 48 at March 15th RP. And at that point, the state was arguing the jury wouldn't figure it out. There's other things that can be the prior conviction. And yet now they're arguing that they were going to figure it out anyway. Well, we don't even need to engage in that debate because Juror 31 figured it out, and Juror 31 told everyone else, and then 12 of those people sat on Mr. Mortensen's jury. And for those reasons, as well as the cumulative error and other arguments in the briefing, we ask that you reverse the conviction for Mr. Mortensen. Thank you, Your Honors.
Our next case this morning.